Thank you for taking the ride on the Freedom Train podcast series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and I think I'm riding solo today. I don't know, Pat might be here. But remember, the Freedom Train podcast series is brought to you by PAX Inc., and that's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org to learn more about the organization, the codes of conduct, how to become a member, how to donate to the organization, how to get more involved with the organization and the community. And make sure you check out the educational center that they have, because there's a lot of information that can help educate and empower you and your household. So once again, that's www.pactsinc.org. While you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. You learn more about myself, about Pat, about all of the wonderful guests that we've had. Also, our other podcasts, the Enigma Sep Hour, the Block and Nickel Money Party, the Tea Time, Black Women Talk, all of the things that we have, Lessons from the Screen, the Fix Sports Podcast, and of course, you know, the Freedom Train podcast series. So www.freedomtrainradio.com. And remember, we're on a whole bunch of platforms. You can just type in Freedom Train Network on everything except Twitter. Remember, we're on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, except for Twitter. Twitter, we're Freedom Train Net, but you can catch us all over the place. You can just Google Freedom Train Network, and we out here. All right, so today's podcast is a good one. It's going to be a good one because this young lady, I first met this young lady, I want to say about 5, 6, maybe 7 years ago. I was, at the time I was working at the Indiana County Health Department. You know, my day job, I do HIV AIDS prevention. So great help is hard to find, and good people, dedicated people, is hard to find. But this young lady, she came into our office and kind of set it ablaze as far as expectations and just the things that she brings to the table. She's smart. She's articulate. She's humble. She's a hard worker. She's a leader. She's not going to let anybody break her down. She's confident. She's ambitious. She brings a lot to the table. She's actually one of Tallahassee's 25 women that you need to know. She's the CEO of an organization called Change the Narrative, LLC. She's a FAMU alumna, so you know she's going to be great in life because she graduated from FAMU. I mean, who graduates from FAMU and don't be great, right? You know what I'm saying? And she has laid a great foundation for herself, and she's a future doctor of public health. So I want you all to get up off your feet, put your hands together for Miss Alexandria Washington. Yeah. How you doing today, Alex?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
I am excited. I'm great. Thank you for being here with us on the Freedom Train.
Of course. I'm so excited about this.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have some fun. We're going to have some fun. Because people get to learn about you, and you get to, you know, give your story and some of the things that you've been doing. Because, you know, like I'm saying, I'm not just blowing smoke. Like, you've really been doing a great job on yourself, building yourself up, but also in the community. And not just the Tallahassee community, but just around the country. You've had the opportunity to do many things. So I'm excited that we get to get into it.
Oh, yeah.
So, I know I gave a little bit about who you are. So can you tell our audience who Alexandria Washington is and who inspired you to become the woman that you are today?
Yeah, of course. So a lot of times I give my background, but to be honest, I'm still trying to figure out who I really am.
Right.
A lot of the work that I do is because I'm trying to find out what is my purpose. on this planet. Okay. I'm really driven by the fact that you just don't come to Earth to be by yourself, not make a difference, and leave. Like, we are all supposed to make some type of impact in the world. And through my education, through the things that I've been able to accomplish, I'm still on that journey of finding out what it is. But I definitely would say who I am is a person that's fighting for everyone to understand the value and the importance of health, but not in a textbooky type way. Like, I'm not expecting everyone to go out and get a doctor in public health, because I'll be the first one to tell you that it is hard and it is stressful. But what we all can do is understand our ancestral roots and understand how that impacts our health, and kind of going back to our roots of time and how our ancestors looked at health. They may not have had the term for what we have going on in the world right now, but they were able to really understand the importance of themselves and really understand to value their health through healthy foods, through gardening, through agriculture. So that is kind of my focus now, and kind of that also goes into who inspires me. For the longest time, I was inspired by celebrity status, and that's not unusual for anyone.
Right.
I was inspired by the Oprahs, the Michelle Obamas, and of course, I still am. If you look at any of my social media accounts, that's usually who appears on my feed. But the people that really made me who I am today is my family and my parents, because they laid this foundation for me, although I didn't appreciate it when I was younger, and that's the story of most young children. They really gave me opportunities to serve my community. They gave me opportunities to kind of figure out what my passion is and to do it so freely that I've been able to kind of manifest the foundation that they've laid for me to really essentially kind of be this rock star that I am today.
There you go. And yes, she said she's a rock star. You better believe it. She said, right.
That's the first time I've ever said it, and it's sinking in now.
Right. But it feels good when you say it.
Right.
Yeah. But no, but I think that's great, though, that for one, your role models were, even though they were celebrities, because, you know, growing up, mine was Emmett Smith. That's who I want to be, Emmett Smith. But having positive role models who give back, because I remember watching, I can't even remember what award show it was, but the first time philanthropy became like a concept in my mind, watching Danny Glover receive an award for the things that he was doing. I had no idea what he was doing for the community. So being able to see things like that, but also those real, and, you know, not trying to say the celebrities aren't real, but the real influences that you can see on a regular basis, those are very, very, very important as well, and being able to have positive adults in your life. And that's one thing I dig about you, is you are a positive adult who don't mind getting your hands dirty. Like, when I'm in the community, you in the community, you know, and not everybody know I be in the places where people don't want to be. But you be in these places too. So that's why I appreciate what you bring to the table, and especially from a health perspective, because you can say all these SAT words, but then go into the community and be able to break it down to the people in the community the way that they need. So talking about health, like, what is it about the realm of health that got you interested in, pursuing health academically, but just also as an advocate, because you are a health advocate. So why health, and why are you a health advocate?
Oh, yeah. So, again, my story is not unlike a lot of small children. At one point, I wanted to become a doctor. I just knew I was going to become a doctor. Then I got into some of those sciences and those math classes, and I'm like, maybe this isn't for me. So then I'm like, oh, I'll become a nurse. That sounds interesting to me. So in high school, what was really cool about my high school was that they actually offered classes that the high school students could take to become a certified nursing assistant. So my junior and my senior year, I was enrolled in classes to get my CNA license because I figured if nothing else, during college, at least I'll be able to make an income because I got the certification for free.
Right.
The more I worked within the field, I was mainly working with people that, you know, they've overcome cancer. I was mainly working with the elderly population. And I just, something tore at me. I'm like, there has to be a way that we can prolong the onset of these diseases. There has to be something that we can do. Because even looking at my family health history, we've been impacted by cancers. We've been impacted by diabetes, by cardiovascular disease, by obesity, you name it. Like, it's in my family lineage. And it just always broke my heart seeing people go through it. So I wanted to know more. I wanted to know what difference I could make in people's health. And that's
right.
When I found out about public health. And that was also the time that I started volunteering with the health department. I think I was at a community event, and I ran into a couple people, and I was like, oh, you know, I want to learn more. I want to volunteer to see what I could do. I had no idea what I was getting myself into, because I actually, when I first came in to pick up my application to volunteer, I was like, oh, I want to work in maternal and child health. And Leroy was the, I guess you can say, not necessarily director. I can't remember his actual title, but he's like, well, we'll do HIV work. Yeah, happy. So he's like, okay, we do HIV work, so that's what you'll be doing. I'm like, you know what? Sign me up. I want to learn as much as I can. And that's when I really fell in love with health education and the prevention focus of public health. It was the opportunity to educate people that look like me and work with people that look like me that typically we don't get that education, or we're just overlooked. And there's so much stigma that's around it, because I've heard people say, oh, well, you know, they're just going to do whatever they want to do, talking about the Black community and just saying, oh, they're not going to understand these terms. They're not going to understand that. And I'm like, no, I've got to put my foot down, because these are the people that look like me, that sound like me, that are contributing to the society, but are not giving the same access to health. So that is really kind of what brought me into this field.
Right. But you, like I said earlier, you came in a little different, because there are a few of the interns who came in through my time at the health department who stand out. And you were one of them, because it was just like the way you just gravitated toward the work that we were doing. You understood the seriousness of what we're doing, but you also understood that you could be yourself. Like, we see some people come in, they try to just mimic everything that everybody else is doing, but you were able to stay in your lane, be yourself, understand who you were, or, you know, kind of, not even if you didn't even fully understand yourself, but you just knew that, okay, this feels right. I'm going to put myself 100% into this. And, you know, it has really, we can really see the progress in everything that you've made from then to now, because, like I said, as a true health advocate, now being able to travel around the country and represent different facets of our realms of health and being ambassador for health and all those different things, it's really manifested itself. So, you know, you are literally one of the people who go from the White House to the crack house with your advocacy.
That's
the best way to do it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, my co-host Patrick, he's able to join us. What's up, Pat? You're on mute.
I'm good. I had to rescue somebody from the White House and the crack house just yesterday.
Okay, cool. With some squirrels and stuff. I got you.
Hey, man.
So Patrick, this is Miss Alex Washington. Alex, this is Patrick Earp.
Her name ain't Alex.
Alexandria. Okay.
That's right. Get it right. Alexandria, don't be letting Joe do that to you. I'm here now, okay? I'm here.
Oh yeah, I forgot to tell you. Patrick, he wears a helmet so all the time. So
hey. It's the Jacksonville Jaguar helmet. So you were talking about people not under are people making the assumption that black people don't understand mental health, right? That's one of the points you just made, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you push back against that? I'm just curious. Like, what is it that they think that we're not understanding as a community? I know this ain't on the list of questions. You just said that, and it made me real curious. I've been listening for a while, and you sounded amazing, by the way. Let me say that. You sound really passionate. Like you really know what's going on, and you're really about that work. But when you said that, because I've heard other people say it as well in the healthcare field, that there is this assumption that black people don't get it, that black people don't understand. And every time I hear that, I'm always curious about what it is. And usually I'm always getting a different answer from the person mm-hmm. that makes the statement. And it paints this picture that there's just this big general picture that black people are just wholly ignorant about everything. And because we're totally ignorant, there is no need to even try to educate or change. And I'm just curious if that's something that you've seen, or if that was what you were alluding to, or if there's something a little bit more specific. I was just curious.
Yeah, I'll definitely clarify that. So it's multifaceted, and it really depends on who you're talking to. Some people do believe that we are just completely ignorant, and it doesn't matter what you tell us, we're not going to get it. And that is systematic, and that comes from their own personal beliefs and those beliefs that have been passed down from generation to generation in their mm-hmm. family. And then you also have people that think that it's not worth it, in the fact that they might get it, but they're still going to do whatever they want to do. So, like, we recognize that people aren't completely ignorant. People know better, but we don't always have access to do better. So right. within my professional field and within community work, like, I've worked for nonprofits. I've worked at the state level. So I want to say that I have a pretty good background and pretty good understanding of, or essentially I've seen where people are coming from, or experienced where people are coming from. One of the biggest things is we lack representation at the upper level. Luckily in Florida, you know, we do a little better when it comes to healthcare and the State Department. You know, we do have some representation, but if we don't have anyone in those decision-making seats that are able to stand up and say, no, your thinking is completely wrong because you have been miseducated, there's a lack mm-hmm. of cultural competency, there's a lack of cultural humility, this is what it really is. If we don't have people that are able to do that, then it's just business as usual. Those preconceived notions that and those biases that have been passed down from generation to generation in your family, it manifests into your work. And unfortunately, minority communities bear the brunt of those biases and the thinking.
Bomb drop. Boom.
Not the fault on you, Pat.
Yeah, she handled that. She handled that.
Yeah. Get your mind right, Pat, when you ask her a question.
Hey, right. Mama sit back down there. I was just curious, and she went on ahead and went all off on me.
She went to fan you. You better remember.
I had to explain this. And, like, I'm happy to explain it because it means that we're making a difference, and it means that people are having to think about it when I say it. And it's like, okay, yeah, you're right. So what can we do to change this?
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. That's because she got a good family and good upbringing. That ain't because of FAMU.
You a hater. I want you to know that.
Partially due to FAMU. You know, FAMU always comes through for us.
There you go. Patrick. So, speaking of FAMU, right, Alex has earned her bachelor's and a master's degree from FAMU in the public health realm. She's working on a doctorate. So, what are some of the biggest health issues that impact the Black community that you've noticed so far?
Ooh, we've got a list, and it's unfortunately, it's just about everything bad that can happen plastered on the top of that list. So when we look at deaths due to breast cancer in Black women, we usually see us ranking highest. When we look at diabetes rates or cardiovascular disease, obesity, even environmental factors, we're usually ranked amongst the highest. And that's kind of what I was alluding to before, the cause of it, because we don't always have access to these life-saving measures or even the screening tools that are available. It's not that we don't know that we should be eating more fruits and vegetables. It's because systematically they won't put a grocery store in our neighborhood so that we can eat more fresh fruits and vegetables. Right. It's not that we don't want to be physically active. It's that we have no sidewalks or no street lights that allow us to be physically active after work. So I always like to remind people, it's not necessarily because of a lack of knowledge. It's because systematically there are policies and there's laws in place and there are people in place that essentially keep holding our progression down.
Right. I definitely agree. Here in Tallahassee, the South Side, Frenchtown, and predominantly Black areas, for a while, both of them were food deserts until they put the Piggly Wiggly on the South Side, but still Frenchtown is still missing a grocery store, a healthy grocery store. You talk about people, with always having high blood pressure and all these different issues, and it's due to, like you said, the lack of access to healthy foods on a regular basis and just exercise and health, all these different things. We can kind of see it happening in the community, and then it's getting worse. So it was just, that's why I'm glad to have people who are fighting for the community out here, and we try to make sure we get these voices out. So.
Oh, yeah.
So, you served as the United States of Women Ambassador for Tallahassee. What is the United States of Women?
So the United States of Women actually started under the Obama White House. They created and convened essentially an expo and a conference that came together. The first one was in 2016 in Washington, D.C., to really kind of talk about what's plaguing women, talking about gender equity, gender equality, pay gap, women's health, just anything that is impacting women, sexual violence, workplace violence, the list goes on and on. So they had the first convening in 2016, and off the realms of that, in 2018, they decided to have another convening because, it was amazing. I didn't get to attend the 2016 one, but I did get to go to the 2018 convening in Los Angeles, California, and they brought women from across the United States together to talk about how do we move gender equality and gender equity forward? What can we do to better serve our women? So from that convening, United States of Women became its own organization that's housed under Civic Nation. And they decided that they wanted to spur 1 million actions by the end of 2018. And part of those 1 million actions was to create an ambassador program and picking 20 women across the United States to serve as ambassadors in their local communities and really get the conversation going about gender equality in their communities and essentially what they can do to move it forward. So, as you said, I serve as the ambassador for Tallahassee for the United States of Women. So, essentially, what I'm doing is working with local organizations in Tallahassee to kind of understand what are some things that are plaguing women in our city, and essentially, what can I do to kind of help other organizations that are already doing the work, because United States of Women recognizes that the work is already being done at the local level. We're essentially coming in to help amplify the voices and amplify the work that's being done, and also finding out ways that we can work collectively together, because unfortunately, too often organizations are very territorial, but we need each other to move forward. So I essentially am coming in to kind of create that collaboration between the organizations to really help move women forward in Tallahassee.
That's cool. Yeah. Organizations.
Men join the United States of Women.
Yes. Like, although, of course, we have women in the name, we recognize that collectively, it will also take men joining and being active in the work that we're doing to move the country forward just completely.
Okay.
That's cool. So you signing up, Pat?
Yeah, I got a couple things on my list to sign up for, but you know, I'm all for women's equality and women's rights and all of that. You know, I mean, Joe, we have shows on this. You know how we
do. I'm just trying to put you on the spot. That's it.
Yeah. I still got to sign up for the black psychology thing too. Thank you for reminding me.
Hey, that's my job, my brother. So the As One Foundation. I've never really heard of it. That's something that you are involved with. So can you tell us what the As One Foundation is and what your involvement with it is?
Of course. So the As One Foundation is a foundation that works around sickle cell trait awareness and also hydration awareness. One of my really good friends, Dr. Tamia Austin, is executive director of this foundation. And essentially, it was started due to a death on SSU's campus. So a little of the backstory, there are twin brothers, Devard and Devon Darling, that both attended Florida State University, and they both played football. During their freshman year, after the season was over, they were doing mat drills. It was during the spring of the year, so they were doing mat drills, they're doing conditioning, and one of the brothers, Devon Darling, they both have sickle cell trait. Well, during these mat drills, Devon Darling kept passing out. Their coaches would not allow them to get water, to get breaks. Essentially, they just kept telling him, go harder, go harder, go harder. So he essentially, you know, he was trying to keep going through these drills, but his body essentially was just, it was exhausted. It needed a break. It needed water. So eventually, to kind of shorten the story, he actually collapsed and passed on the practice field due to exertional sickling. So what that is, it's where your body kind of, the cells, they're not getting enough hydration, they're not getting the opportunity to rest. So his body essentially shut down. And that was extremely devastating. The other twin brother, from that, he had to go through essentially some intense testing to kind of rule out what was going on. Like, they knew that they had sickle cell trait, but they were trying to say that it was kind of other things and whatnot. So Devard Darling is the living brother. He founded the organization to essentially make sure that this doesn't happen to anybody else. So this past month, essentially, I was offered the opportunity to be a board member for the As One Foundation, and I am extremely excited about it because, first, there's so much stigma surrounding sickle cell trait and sickle cell disease. A lot of times people are just taught and told that it is just a black disease. And to break that stigma, that is not true. It affects and impacts anyone that is from African, Mediterranean, South Asian. There's just a whole list of people that can be impacted by it. And essentially, it could be anyone in the world. So what this foundation does is to raise awareness of what sickle cell trait is, what exertional sick lean is, why it's important to be hydrated, because we don't have a lot of foundations and we don't have a lot of education that does that, especially in our medical community. And they also work to get the conversation outside of just being September. As we know, September is National Sickle Cell Disease Awareness Month, and a lot of times we'll donate, we'll talk about the conversations during that month, but it's a year-round thing. People are impacted every day of their lives. So they really work to make sure that people understand the importance of knowing if you have sickle cell trait, and just to demystify and get rid of a lot of the stigma that surrounds it.
Wow, that's cool, though. That's definitely a great organization to be a part of. I remember that story. I remember when all of that happened. And I don't know, I think the Living Brother, I know he went on to play at Washington State, I believe, to finish up his collegiate career.
Yeah, and then he also played in the NFL.
Right. So, but now I'm glad to hear this, because I never knew exactly what came out of that situation as far as bringing more awareness to what happened to his brother and how that can be prevented. So this kind of full circle to me, because I was fully engaged in that story when it happened. And now to sit here and speak with you, somebody who was a part of that organization, coming from this whole situation, that's pretty cool. And I'm glad that it exists.
Yes. Like, of course, it was through tragedy, but this conversation needs to be happening. So there is a glimmer of light that came out of it.
Right. That's cool.
That's very cool. And that also gives me an opportunity to get on my sounding board about these athletic coaches who are constantly grilling these kids with limited understanding, and in some cases, not all, but in some cases, I've heard from a great many people. I'm sorry, I'm channeling Donald Trump. But in some cases, they don't even have what seems to be an appropriate level of concern for their players. If your players are struggling, if your players appear to be struggling to keep up, if they appear to be, if it's hot out and you've been working them like crazy and they're not sweating, like there are like common signs that a lot of these athletic coaches need to be trained up on in order to recognize, look, this isn't just a soft player. There might really be something going on there. And even if it is a soft player, it's still to your benefit to err on the side of caution. If you really think he's soft and he can't hack it, then don't play him during the games, but let him rest during practice. I mean, I don't know, Joe, you play, you're part of all that, but to me, I don't get it, bro.
You have the mayor right now, the coach, DJ Durkin, I believe that's what his name, who is on the investigation right now at the University of Maryland, because the player died like 2 weeks after, I think it was extreme dehydration, all those other things. Players died. Like, it's at least two or three stories this year of college football players who died because of being overexerted out on the field. So it's a real issue. So things like this do need to be brought to the forefront, because you can't, it's not good to literally kill yourself to be an athlete, you know?
Right.
Yeah. The more I say like this, the more I learn about athletics, especially football, the more I learn about it and the different dangers and things, the more I'm for us teaching our children to use their brains rather than their bodies to get themselves out of the hood, out of the situation that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's disturbing. I hear that story, and then I hear what you're saying, and then I go back to, I mean, and I know it's another show, but it's that's one of the few things concerning sports that I'm still passionate about. You know, I've lost a lot of my passion for sports in general, but the way kids are coached nowadays, that bothers me on a deep emotional level. It disturbs me. Anyways, how about those Bears? So, as one, that was what we just talked about, just so everybody's following along. So, Eli, I did that? Yeah. So, can you talk to us a little bit about what generational health is and how you go about encouraging the community to embrace that?
Yeah, of course. So generational health is something that I'm starting to embrace and starting to kind of coin, essentially. But I look at generational health just as someone would look at, essentially, generational wealth. So your family had money, they left you money, things like that. Well, I want to look at it from the health perspective, because what we're seeing is your family had diabetes, you get diabetes. We want to change that concept. We want to change those outcomes. So when I say generational health, essentially it is looking at the entire family. It's intergenerational. It's looking at your grandparents. It's looking at your parents. It's looking at you. It's looking at your future offspring and finding out what you all can do to ensure that the next generation has better health outcomes. So it's that your family's shopping at the Frenchtown Farmers Market to get some fresh fruits and vegetables instead of going to the convenience store where the apple has traveled probably 500 miles before it even got to you and has lost all of its nutritional value. It's ensuring that your family's talking about health. A lot of times we don't really like to talk about health. Right. We know that other family members might be experiencing something. We know that they have diabetes. They've got to check their blood sugar. But we're not really having those conversations about what it means for our health. And when we think about mental health, that is a whole conversation by itself, because we're not even having those conversations enough. We're just labeling a family member crazy and saying, oh, we don't talk about that. If you're depressed, if you're going through something, don't talk about that. People don't need to know your business. People don't need to know the family business. It's essentially changing that whole conversation and focusing on how we can be healthier and make sure our parents are healthier, our grandparents are healthier, and how our future offspring or offspring, if you have children, can be healthier and live a longer life.
Yeah.
That sounds like epigenetics.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go with your big word, Pat. With your big word.
Well, I like the way she's converting it and making it a simpler topic to talk about. Because when you say epigenetics, you know, I haven't found very many people that, I mean, Joe, I called you one day because I was frustrated because I wanted to talk about it and nobody could talk about it with me. So I just started talking about it with you and you was like, what? You got the gist of it. I'm not going to, you know, like Joe got it. He just didn't know what it was before I started talking about it, but he got it. But when you say something like generational health, like, you know, we can put those two words together and get a understanding of what you're talking about without having to have it really, you know, really drilled down in the same way you would if I were to say, you know, we need to look at your epigenetics. You know, people would be like, what the hell is an epigenetic? I don't know what the, you know, like. I got my genetics, and then I got me. Like, what is the epi? So I don't need no EpiPen. What are you talking about? So I get it. I like that. I like that approach. I like the way you're angling it. And I think it's a conversation we do need to have, because it's hard to have those conversations about health when you're not talking about the total picture of everything that's involved. So, you know, a lot of us understand, you know, my grandmother or my grandfather has, or my grandparents had something, my parents had something, chances of me having it are elevated, you know, but even in that, when they start talking about their own health, we still kind of like innately, or maybe culturally, or I'm not sure what it is, but we still kind of silo ourselves away from our family when we think about our own health. And so I love the way that that conversation is contextualized when you put the generational health component. Well, let's talk about your generational health. You know, so I like that. I can dig it.
But it's also like everybody's saying, ultra important, because it's getting people to really understand that you control what happens to your body. Like my grandmother's diabetes doesn't have anything to do with me unless I'm eating exactly the same way she ate and doing the same exact things, because people forget that it's the habits and the patterns that are passed down. So if everybody in the house eats this one way, everybody will be affected in the same way, rather than if you have that one person who says, well, okay, I'm not going to eat this, you'll start to see a difference and change. So that's, to me, that's what's good about the way you put the concept of generational health, because you already have a community who's starting to think more about generational wealth. And they get that. So when you put that generational health concept, you're like, hold on, okay, so you mean to tell me I don't have to have diabetes? I don't have to have heart disease? I don't have to be obese? And that starts to, you know, get people to change.
I want to clarify just, and this is from an epigenetic discussion. You're right in terms of, if everybody in my family eats this way and I eat that way, then chances are I'm going to end up the same way that they did. But there is also another component, a genetic component. Because everybody in your family ate that way, your genetics are predisposed to express themselves this way.
Right.
So there is a chance, a small chance, but there is still a chance that even if you change your eating habits, you're still going to have some of the same problems to a lesser degree, maybe. But I think the key for me, the takeaway, is that if I choose to do different, even if I end up the same way, I have created an epigenetic change for my children so that they might be different. And if they do something different, then the change gets pushed even deeper. So for me, it's a discussion of, when you say generational health, this is deeper than living for myself. Even if I inherited genetic predispositions from my parents and grandparents, I can give my kids something different. So I'm going to eat healthy for my children. I'm going to live and work out and be healthy and happy for my kids and my grandkids, so that they're not looking up at me like, man, you messed me up. Man, I hate you. Well, hopefully they don't say that. That's
what
Right. So you've created your own organization in the midst of the 175,000 other things that you do. And it has changed the narrative, LLC, which is actually what you call a health boutique that focuses on education and advocacy. So why, out of all the other things you're doing, why did you choose to spend your time creating your own organization? And what are the overall goals of your organization?
Yeah. So I wish I remember who I was having the conversation with, but they said something that really stuck to me. I might have, or maybe I was watching TV. I don't remember exactly where it came from, but I just remember someone saying that, you know, they work for this company and that is fine and dandy, but at the end of the day, they can't leave that company to their family. At the end of the day, like, if they were to pass, if they were to leave, then their family essentially has nothing. So they created their own company because they wanted to be able to leave that legacy and leave that work to their family. And I was just like, this is the smartest thing I've ever heard. I'm sure other people have heard it or heard it. And also, I'm sure other people have told me it before, but it just didn't dawn to me at the time. But something really struck at that time. And also at the time, I think I was probably working for another nonprofit. And I have been, over the years, developing these skill sets in health evaluation and kind of health programming. And of course, going further in my education, I realized that I have specific skill sets that other companies need, but may not be able to directly hire me full time or bring in a staff person to fulfill those needs. Like, a lot of people don't know how to do health evaluations on programs, but it's required in a lot of grants to be able to write an evaluation program and to be able to have that evaluation skill set. So I realized that I had the opportunity with my unique skill set to really start leaving a legacy for my family in the fact of having this company and being able to own this company. So with Change the Narrative, I help other organizations, whether it be nonprofits, whether it be a state organization, whether it be a small family-owned company, whatever it might be. I help them essentially develop their health promotion programs and run their health promotion programs. And I also do some grant writing and grant evaluation skill, bring in my grant evaluation skill set. Just anything health related that an organization or a company may need to help their community achieve optimal health, I bring in that skill set to those companies and organizations.
That's what's up. Thinking outside the box, evaluating, then putting together a plan of action, and now you will feel you being able to fill those lanes. That's what's up. You smart. Gosh.
Yeah, that ain't that FAMU. I'm sorry, I said that wrong.
You have haters all written through you. All written through you, Patrick. It's all good.
What you said,
because you didn't get a chance to experience FAMU.
Dell State, whoop, whoop.
And I got all the skill sets from FAMU.
There you go. You said, did you dare say Dell State?
That's right.
Oh.
Right. Oh. You see?
Dell State, woo woo. Wilmington College, woo woo.
Uh-huh.
I went to FAMU for a semester. I didn't finish none of the classes though.
Hey.
That makes me more fan of you than y'all.
Whatever. Check our resume.
And so, have you been getting a lot of support for your company? I'm curious.
I have. What I've been able to leverage more is essentially myself and my speaking abilities. Of course, when I start talking about my speaking, I start tripping over words. So what I've been able to leverage and do more of is health education presentation and essentially going and speaking to organizations and companies about specific health topics. So that's where I am right now. Essentially, people want my knowledge and what I know and what I can express. So I lately been getting hired a lot to do speaking engagements.
Joe, speaking engagement.
I know. I got. I need to get some more too myself. I'm jealous. I'm happy.
I'm gonna ask you jelly because I got some peanut butter.
Pat, and let me tell you, Alex, Patrick think he's slick. He dropped the diss track on me. He dropped the real diss song on me. I forgot. But I'm going to get him, though.
I dropped two of them. I ain't dropped one.
I didn't hear the second one.
Because I'm on time with my look, bro. When I say if you don't respond by this time, I'm going to hit you with another one, I don't be messing around, man.
So I'm going to have to ruin his career. He's going to drop a diss track on me.
It was a positive diss track. I was just telling the community about all of the good things that Joseph has done with his life. I know, for real. I just said it real fast so can nobody make sense of it. And then at the beginning, I said, forget you, Joe. I'm finna roast you. So he thought it was a diss, but really it was a big up. He should use that in marketing.
There it is. Yeah. I have old ladies cross the street and all that stuff.
Ask a question, Joe. She ain't here for all that.
As a health advocate, as a person of the community, during all of your time, what has been your greatest experience so far as a health advocate, and how has your health advocacy helped improve you as a person?
I would say that my greatest experience, it's anytime I really have the opportunity to advocate in front of legislators. So the last couple of years, I participated in advocacy and legislative days in Florida at our state capitol here. And then about 2 years ago, I had the opportunity to go to Washington, D.C. on behalf of the Florida Breast Cancer Foundation to kind of talk to our United States senators and Congress members about the importance of, you know, fully funding anything having to do with breast cancer education and research. And why I want to say those are kind of my essentially greatest memories, and what has come out of it has been great, is the fact that policy controls everything that we do and everything that we want to do. Unfortunately, if there's no funding and a line item for breast cancer screening, then who's more likely to die quickest from not getting those screenings? Who's more likely and who's more heavily impacted? So I'm really, what I like about health advocacy is it doesn't have to be on a policy level. Health advocacy can just also be through social media, what we're sharing, making sure that people are getting the correct health information, because in the World Wide Web, anyone can put out information, and I've read some things that were not even close to being correct. But health advocacy can stem from as small as talking to people one-on-one to going to our nation's capital and essentially informing our members of Congress why it's important that these programs are funded and letting them really see the impact and who is going to be infected the soonest if we don't pass these policies.
Right. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I mean, we need all type of advocates. We need all type of things, everything that goes on in the community. We need to make sure that people like you have a platform, have people backing them up, just being able to have the community understand what you're doing, why you're doing, so they know it's important. Because I think a lot of times, especially if you're a person in your capacity and you don't have celebrity status, is you see quite often, and it's one of my pet peeves, is people who do real work don't get the amount of attention as a lot of people who do foolishness or who are just famous or who may say something that's surface level. And I do get it. I get it. We live in the celebrity culture and just the way people operate. So I do get that, but it's still a pet peeve of mine that someone like you should get as much attention as possible for the things that you bring to the table, for the things that you do, and the way that you fight for the community, and just go out and just put it all on the line for the community, for people, for the less fortunate. And it's a it's an honor to be able to call you a friend, to be able to be an acquaintance of yours and just be in your presence with all the things that you have going on and all the things that you do, because the community is definitely benefiting from a lot that you do. So just
thank you.
But that don't make it right just because we live in celebrity culture. She's an expert subject. And she deserves to be listened to when she talks about what she's been studying and what she knows. And if people need to check their fanaticism, they need to get out of it. Look, it's cool that you love Beyonce, but as far as you know, Beyonce ain't been studying public health for the last, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 years. So, yeah. Like I said, we understand there's celebrity culture, but I'm of the firm mindset that needs to be pushed back on. That's part of the reason why we have the problems we have, because the people that study the issues are not listened to until they become a rock star. And once you become a rock star, you don't really have time to study the issues.
Right. Hey, but that's why we created platforms like this, like the Freedom Train. So people like yourself and others who are in the community who are doing great things, whether it's grassroots or on a mass level, it just needs to be projected. It needs to be celebrated, and that's what we're here to do, make sure that we celebrate you and everything that you do. So before we wrap this up, can you tell everybody where they can contact you, how they can get in touch with you through social media if they want to book you for us? Hold up, man. If they want to book you for a speaking engagement, all those things, how can they get in contact with you? I got this, Pat.
Yeah, definitely. So I have my website. That is www.changethenarrativesllc.com. You can see organizations that I've worked with. You can see the work that I do. I've started blogging so people can get more health information, more reliable, more trustworthy health information right then and there. I am also very active on social media. My mom would probably say I spend too much time on social media, but apparently it's been working in my favor. I am on Instagram and Twitter at Alexandria J. Wash. I also have pages for my business, and it's at Change Our Health. So anytime, I'm always happy to help anyone that reaches out to me, whether you just want to know more about getting into public health, whether you have a specific health question that I might be able to answer, just reach out to me anytime, and I am more than happy to help in any capacity that I can or connect you to people that might be able to help better.
Cool. And make sure you have food at your event that you invite her to. It's just
right.
Gonna be right. You know, feed her, okay?
Because at the end of the day, I am still a college student, so I really appreciate when there's food at events.
There you go. So our final question. This is Pat's question, and you already can tell that he's a little special. So we set the question up a little special for him.
So, if you were the all-powerful ruler of Black America, what would you change, and what would your message to the people be?
I absolutely love this question. And if I were the almighty, powerful ruler, I would change, and my message would also be that we collaborate more. I don't know why. Well, essentially, I kind of do know why. It has a historical significance and perspective to it. But we don't collaborate enough. We are always in this competition mode. We're always thinking, oh, if she's a health educator, I can't also be a health educator. Well, there's billions of people in the world. I'm not going to reach all billions of people. So I need you to also be that health educator. I need you to also be working with me. We're in too much competition of who's able to do it first, who's able to do it better, who has the most likes on social media, who has the most followers. But we're only going to go a couple steps if we go by ourselves. We always go so much further. We change the world when we work together. That is just the one thing I would love to see more of, is collaboration and get out of the mindset that only one person can achieve success.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Because we all know we need it. That's no secret. Everybody knows it. Other communities know it, so they take advantage of it. That's how they can come into our communities and set up their businesses and things. We patronize them before we patronize our own. So that's definitely at the top of the list of things that we need to do to work together. So. Yes, ma'am. See, that's why I like you, because you come in and you drop all these jewels on people to make them get their mind right, making people be accountable for their actions and stuff. There you go. So definitely appreciate you coming aboard Freedom Train. You know, whenever you need to, the train is right here. You have we're going back to making our different carts, carriages, whatever they call them, our different cars. You got your own special VIP section on here. So definitely welcome back anytime. And remember, this is Doc. You get ready, get used to saying it, Dr. Alexandria Washington. Yeah, so we're gonna have to say it like that so people get used to saying it.
One day it's gonna happen.
Sooner, yes, man, real soon.
Later.
Real soon. But thank you very much. I ain't gonna hold you up no more. It'll start raining and it's going crazy out here. But thank you once. Yeah. Thank you for being on our show. And definitely look forward to speaking with you in the future.
Yeah, thank you for the platform. Thank you for the opportunity. I, Joe and Pat, I truly enjoy this. Thank you all so much.
No problem. Thank you, and we see you later.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, Pat. I'm finna drop a freestyle on you right now, Pat. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Is you ready?
Mm-hmm.
I ain't gonna do it right now. You ain't ready. I ain't gonna do it right now. You ain't even ready. You ain't even ready, bro. But let me tell you what you need to do, though.
What's that?
Change the narrative.
Okay.
You better change the narrative. If you don't change the narrative, you ain't talking about nothing. There it is. You got any parting words?
Power to the people.
Power to the people. If it's raining where you are, be careful. Don't be out here being crazy when you're driving. But thank you once again, Alexandra Washington, for coming through, dropping a lot of good information about health. I appreciate her being a health advocate. Definitely help our community get better. www.freedomtrainradio.com. Remember, Freedom Train Network on most of the social media platforms except Twitter. Twitter is Freedom Train Net, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. We out here, YouTube. We out here. Holla at us. Because if you don't know, now you know. Thank you.